This is Road to Calvary with Pastor Dave Cook of Calvary Baptist Church. On today's edition.
The light of Christ helps to convict us of sin because sometimes we may not recognize how dark it's gotten in our own lives. As the original light of the world and as the source of our light, Jesus did all of these things and beyond and more. He didn't make the darkness darker, but he did make it more recognizable for what it is. In contrast to him, he's the light. When he's not there, you see the darkness. You can see the difference. Jesus lived his life in such a way that people were made to see things they couldn't see clearly before.
Darkness. What a great thing when you're trying to sneak that one last piece of pie. But how about when you're trying to figure out where to go or how to manage your fears? Is it helpful? Today, Pastor Dave compares the darkness to the light. He talks about Peter realizing all his mistakes and knowing that Jesus had none. Light's amazingly telling of the things you were blind to. Things that seemed right aren't. Don't hide what you've experienced and know to be true about Jesus. Share it with others. Now, here's Pastor Dave in the book of Matthew chapter 5 as he continues his message, Salt and Light.
What we need to think about is what's our demeanor and our attitude in general towards others that we're putting on display as we're going about our daily business. Christians should be the kindest people. Christians should be the hardest workers. Christians should be the most attentive students. We should be adding flavor to our surroundings. And as a side effect of that flavor that comes with salt, the third thing about salt is that salt creates thirst. Salt creates thirst. You know, I love pretzels, right? I love even like those little sourdough, Utz's sourdough pretzels. They're great. I love pretzels. It's one of my favorite snacks to just nosh on as we're just hanging out at home. Although I don't frequent bars, but I do know that generally speaking, if you go to a bar, at least it used to be, that you know they have a little thing of pretzels or peanuts sitting on the bar that, you know, are complimentary. If you're just sitting there, you can pop some pretzels or peanuts. And the real reason for that, it seems like it's nice. Oh, that's so nice. They give us some pretzels. Well, they have a reason for putting the pretzels or the peanuts. They make sure it's a salty snack because while you're there eating the free peanuts or the free pretzels, it's making you thirsty. And they're thinking they're going to give a little bit on the pretzels and they're going to make a lot more on the beer that you're going to order after you get thirsty, right? So that's a marketing strategy because everyone knows that salt creates thirst. And Jesus made people thirsty. He made people thirsty for himself. He made people thirsty for God. We see this with Nicodemus in John chapter 3 as he's talking to Nicodemus, who was a very educated leader of Israel, a spiritual leader of Israel. And we saw him with that hunger toward God. Mary Magdalene, a troubled woman, had all kinds of issues, but she was just drawn to him. She was thirsty for what he had to offer. We certainly see that in the apostles. You know, where else were they going to go? He had the words of eternal life. He made them thirsty. And when we live a life that reflects the character of the kingdom, a life that is reflected in those beatitudes at the beginning of this chapter, if when we do that, people will be drawn to Jesus because they get thirsty, and then he will present them with living water that will quench any thirst. He brings fulfillment to life where otherwise, for many people, it's just drudgery. I was also going to add on here, a fourth thing about salt is that it raises blood pressure. But a lot of you already know how to help raise other people's blood pressure. So we'll leave that one go. But the life of a salty believer is a beautiful thing. But salt can't have its effect. It can't do what it's supposed to do if it stays in the salt shaker. It needs to be poured out and it needs to be rubbed into the world. Again, we're to be in the world, not of it, but we are to be in it. We are to be involved in the life of our community, and I do believe that's an area where our church needs to grow. We need to be more visible in the community. They need to see us being involved so they know who we are and they know that we care. The question is, are we spreading enough salt to make people thirsty for Jesus? Are we even salty at all? There's questions we have to ask ourselves. Jesus said in the second half of verse 13, if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? Now, talking about literal salt, salt cannot lose its saltiness. Salt cannot, it doesn't wear out and become less salty. But, you know, salt can't become not salt. But what can happen is salt could be diluted with other substances so that the actual taste of the salt itself can't be determined anymore. It's too overly diluted with other things. And I think that can often happen in the church with professing believers. And that brings us back to verse 8, where Jesus commends and he says, blessed are those who are pure in heart. He's commending someone with a pure and undivided heart. Someone who's pure in heart, that has an undivided and focused heart, is going to be salty. But the truth, the sad truth is that there are professing believers that are essentially indistinguishable for the world around them. And that just should not be. It's dangerously easy for a professing believer to lose their salty, preserving influence in the world. And I think we're seeing the results of that today in our world all around us, certainly in the American church. So some questions to ask ourselves, is there any difference as we look at the world around us? Is there any difference in the way we view, say, our finances versus the way the rest of the world does? Is there any difference in the way that we view our leisure or the way we even view happiness and the desire for it? Are we in any way distinct in our ethics from the world around us? Or do we blend right in? Do we just fit right in with everyone else? How does our compassion measure up as compared to the world at large? What's the difference in our goals and dreams that we have versus those who are not following Christ? And as we consider those questions with a conscience that is informed, hopefully, by Scripture, we can see and we can determine if our salt is penetrating the meat or if it's just been too diluted to be effective and just is going to be thrown out and walked on. Because the Christian life that's lost its saltiness is not useful for anything at all. But God is gracious. We can still turn back to the source to get a fresh supply. Jesus asks, how shall its saltiness be restored? And that may be impossible by natural means. However, Jesus can even resalt a believer. So if you recognize, you say, man, I realize I have not been salt. I have not been salty in my life. Then what we need to do is repent, and we need to turn back to Christ for a resalting. Call on him to change you, because we can't do it in our own flesh. We cannot do it. Only he can through the power of the Spirit. But Jesus doesn't leave us at salt. We also are told that we are the light of the world. We're the light of the world. Now, that may be a little surprising that Jesus calls us the light of the world, because if you know John chapter 8, verse 12, Jesus refers to himself as the light of the world. And the context around actually where Jesus did that, I mean, many of us know that verse. We know Jesus is the light of the world. He's the way, the truth, and the life, all these things. But the context around where he proclaimed to the people that he was the light of the world are actually very interesting and I think a bit instructive. The night before Jesus makes this statement, the night before he goes to the temple and makes this statement that he's the light of the world, the Jews took part in a ceremony that was called the illumination of the temple. And what that ceremony was, it was a celebration of the great pillar of fire, which of course was the very presence of God, the pillar of fire that led the people of Israel through the wilderness during the Exodus. It was a celebration of God's expressing himself as that pillar of fire. So in this celebration, they had these massive candelabras that they had, and they had these huge torches in the candelabras, and they were all lit up, and these huge flames that were coming off of this. And these torches, it says that these torches not only lit up the temple, but it lit up all of Jerusalem. At least maybe that was being a little superlative, but that they're saying it just was so overpoweringly light. And the next morning, with the smoke from these charred torches probably still wafting up into the sky, Jesus comes to the temple, and you can almost picture, and we don't know that he did this, but you can almost picture him pointing at these huge candelabras and saying, I am the light of the world. He says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Now, make no mistake, Jesus isn't beating around the bush here. He's not trying to make a trite saying. He's basically saying that pillar of fire, that light that guided you through the wilderness, that was me. And by pointing out that he was the light of the world, Jesus implicitly is saying that without me, the world is in darkness. And we need to keep that truth in our mind as we consider what Jesus says here in verse 14, where he now turns that on us and says, you are the light of the world. The world is in spiritual darkness. And the tragic truth is that the majority of people in the world like it that way. In John chapter 3, verse 19, Jesus tells us, the light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. You know, we know the vast, you know, we say things like when someone, maybe someone, you know, steals a car, and if they do it during the day, we're actually shocked, because we tell the story is, These people stole my car in broad daylight, because it's unusual. People normally are doing these things at night under cover of darkness so that they can't be seen, that they can get away without anyone knowing what they did. That's why people love the darkness. They commit crimes in the darkness because they don't want to be seen. And the darkness holds a lot of dangers. And the darkness can cause fear because we don't know what's going on around us. There are things happening, but Jesus gives us hope by saying that you're not left in darkness, you are the light of the world. We're the flashlight that helps people see their surroundings. Now, if we were to say that about ourselves, if I were to walk around and say, I'm the light of the world, or we are the light of the world, Calvary Baptist Church, we're the light of the world, that sounds really cocky, right? That sounds a little cocky, but it isn't us that's saying this. This is what Jesus said. Jesus says of us that we are the light of the world. And frankly, that's one of the most amazing statements that Jesus ever made, especially considering that we know what we're like left to ourselves, right? We know ourselves, and when we look at this and go, I don't know about that. So how can we be the light of the world? Well-known theologian named Donald Barnhouse, he's had such a way with illustrations, but he put it this way. He said that when Christ was in the world, he was like the shining sun that's here in the day and gone at night. When the sun sets, the moon comes up. The moon, the church, shines, but not with its own light. It shines with reflected light. So of course, we know that the light of the moon is really not the light of the moon at all. It's the sun reflecting off the moon, and that's what we're seeing. He went on to say this. He continued his analogy and said, when Jesus was in the world, he said, I am the light of the world. But as he contemplated leaving the world, he said, you are the light of the world. At times, he says, at times the church has been at full moon, dazzling the world with an almost daytime light. These have been the times of great enlightenment, such as those of Paul and Luther and Wesley. And at other times, the church has been only a thumbnail moon with a very little light shining upon the earth. Whether the church is a full moon or a new thumbnail moon, waxing or waning, it reflects the light of the sun. Paul said in Ephesians 5:8, for at one time you were in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Wise words. Walk as children of light. Over the centuries, the church has had some great shining lights. People like Charles Spurgeon, Jim Elliot, Richard Wurmbrand. We talked about last week, the founder of Voice of the Martyrs ministry, who was tormented in a Russian gulag prison. There were some bright and shining lights that we see. People that we can see that they are salt and light, and that they lived out the Beatitudes in so many ways. But the church also has many, 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 even more, lesser lights. People who may never be known outside of their own small community, but yet are still living this out. Even children can be lights. I remember when my oldest son, David, was little, my wife would take him shopping to the grocery store with her, and he would be sitting in the little cart, and she's going through, and I don't know, he was 3 or 4 years old, maybe four, probably 4 years old, maybe. And she's going into the line, and the person in front of him would, maybe look back and see there's a little kid there. And he would look right at them and say, do you worship the God in heaven? He was letting his light shine, right? I think of Joey, who is always, he's always ready to give a hug, and he prays some of the most amazing heartfelt prayers. He's letting his light shine, even at his age. So what are the qualities? What are some qualities of light that we are to display? Number one, light can be seen. Light isn't hidden. Light can be seen. And Jesus makes this point right at the end of verse 14. He says, a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. So if a city, with all the lights that are come from a city, right, if it's put up on top of a hill, there's no way you can obscure it. I've been to Ecuador, but I don't remember this personally, but there's a city, Quito, in Ecuador. It's up about 10,000 feet. And I read someone, a commentator, talking about that city, saying that from 75 miles around, you can see the light coming from the city, lighting up the sky. Like I said, I've been there. I don't remember that, but I'll take their word for it. It's up on a hill, and the light can be seen from miles around. Believers are to be like that. There's no way you can obscure the light of a city if it's up on a hill. Down in a valley, maybe, not up on a hill. And we're supposed to be like that. We're to be visible. There should be no such thing as an invisible believer. The smallest light pierces the darkness. The littlest match can be seen in the darkest room. The darkness can't swallow up the light, even the smallest light. And the light will penetrate into the smallest little cracks. If there's one little opening, the light will get through it. And that's the way we were supposed to be. as believers. Jesus goes on in verse 15 to point out the absolute ridiculousness of lighting a lamp and then putting a basket over it. It makes no sense. And Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, the great preacher, said this: if we find in ourselves a tendency to put the light under a bushel, we must begin to examine ourselves and make sure that it really is light. It's good thoughts. If we're hiding our light, is it really light? Sounds like one of those, if a tree falls in the forest, you know, and you're not there. Is it really light if you're covering it up? Well, probably not. When you're traveling and you see the lights of a city approaching as you're coming into the city, you can look at that and say, ah, we're almost to the hotel, or we're almost there. We're going to be in warmth and safety. It kind of represents that as you're pulling up to the place where you're going. Is that how outsiders view the church? Do they think of us as a place of warmth and safety? They consider each of us individually in that way. So not only is a light visible, but also a light can reveal. It's really the purpose of light, right? It reveals what's going on around us. Jesus' second illustration here involving light is he refers to a lamp lighting a house. You wouldn't take a lamp, put it under a basket. What you're going to do is you're going to put it up somewhere so it's going to shine, because if the lamp under a basket isn't fulfilling the purpose that you have the lamp for, there's no point in lighting it if it's not going to do its purpose. It's not being useful. So we put it on a stand, and Jesus says that it gives light to all the house because the light provides the illumination. It reveals things as they are. I'm sure most of you at one time or another may have walked into an unfamiliar room. Maybe you're visiting someone's house that you don't really familiar with the house that much, and you walk into a room in the middle of the night and you can't find the light switch, and you know, you're bumping into furniture as you're trying to figure out how to turn a light on. But then when finally you stumble upon the light switch and you turn it on, you're like, oh, well, now it's no problem navigating through because you can see things for as they are. The light reveals what's there. The light reveals whatever dangers may be present, and it helps us to find our way safely. And that's the way we're to be as the church, helping people to find their way. And then also light can awaken. I probably should say light should awaken us, because the light itself is an awakening. But light can awaken us. You ever been sleeping and you're trying to sleep and someone comes in the room and you've been in a dark room for a while and you're comfortable and then someone flips the light on because it's their time to get up. You know, they flip the light on. You're like, oh. My kids, when we go to wake them up, if they're sleeping too late, we not only turn the light on, but we give them a song as well, which they love so much. But the light, you're just like, oh, I don't want, you know, it wakes us up. If you're driving a car and you're not really paying attention to your speed while you're driving, but then in your mirror you see some lights, wakes you up, right? Makes you, your awareness kicks into high gear. You become alert. And light makes us more aware of the darkness. Sometimes I can be reading just by the light coming in by the window, and as the afternoon's going on, it'll get a little darker, but it's getting gradually darker and I don't notice it right away. And I'm kind of, I don't even realize how I'm kind of squinting to read, and then someone comes in and flips the light on. I'm like, whoa, I didn't even realize how dark it had gotten here. The light of Christ helps to convict us of sin, because sometimes we may not recognize how dark it's gotten in our own lives. As the original light of the world and as the source of our light, Jesus did all of these things and beyond and more. He didn't make the darkness darker, but he did make it more recognizable for what it is in contrast to him. He's the light. When he's not there, you see the darkness. You can see the difference. Jesus lived his life in such a way that people were made to see things they couldn't see clearly before. Things like their sin, their imperfection, their impurity. Think about Peter's reaction when Peter was face to face with Jesus and he just really recognized, probably for the first time, that Jesus' holiness and just who he was that he was standing talking to. And he immediately reacts and says, away from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man. He saw the contrast. He was confronted with who he was versus who God is. Light and darkness were very clearly divided. Jesus made such a clear distinction between good and evil. He eliminated the option for us to kind of compare ourselves with one another and think that we're okay because I'm okay compared to this guy or that person. He's the standard. Yet, even being the standard and being perfect in holiness, he did draw people to himself. And he wants us to draw people to him. Of course, he's the one doing the drawing, as we know theologically. But he places us in places where he wants us to shine. Just as the person who owns the lamp puts it up on a stand so that the light can be used to its best advantage. Verse 16 says, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. And that is a command, by the way. It's not a suggestion. He's telling us, if you're a light, if that's what you are, and if you're a believer, you are. If you're light, then you are to shine. That is what you are to do. And that's what a light does. A light can't not shine on its own, right? And he tells us that we're to shine by good works, by putting good works on display, not for our own benefit, not so everyone thinks we're a great person and puffs us up, but you know, we're not trying to build our own resume. But the idea is that by acts of compassion and caring to others, people will discover the ultimate source of the light that they're seeing is not Dave Cook, but God. And by seeing that, by recognizing that, then they give glory to him. That should be our goal. Right? Psalm 115:1, David writes this, "Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name give glory." That should be our prayer as well. A true believer will let his light shine. And if we're shining for God, then the question we should ask, if we honestly look at ourselves and say, no, I believe I am shining for God, but our question should then be, well, how can I shine more? How can I shine more? You know, for Halloween, I picked up a bag of candy in case any trick-or-treaters came by. You know, our street, we don't really get a lot of them, but I like to be ready, you know, in case any are coming. And so I bought this little bag of glow-in-the-dark Kit Kats. Now, my kids were very disappointed to find out that the candy itself didn't glow in the dark, but the wrapper, the logo, the Kit Kat logo was supposed to glow in the dark. It was a black wrapper and had this glowy logo. And so one of my kids took one of the bars and said, oh, it's supposed to glow in the dark. And he went into a dark room and said, it doesn't really glow. Isn't really doing it. It's not really, maybe a tiny little bit, but it's really not nothing to write home about. You know, he said, it's false advertising. This thing ain't glowing at all. So I took the bar and I went over to, we have these little pendant lights that hang down over our countertop in the kitchen. I just stuck it up to the light and held it there for maybe a minute or so. And then I said, now try it. Anyone in the other room? And sure enough, glowed really well. It had to be exposed to the light in order to then glow in the darkness. And I think that's as I'm doing that, I said, there's a spiritual application here. There's a spiritual application in a glow-in-the-dark Kit Kat wrapper. It's awesome. It's great. So for us to shine brighter, we need increased exposure to the source of the light. We need to expose ourselves to Christ, soaking in the rays of his word and spending time in prayer, basking in his presence. 2 Corinthians 3:18 gives us a picture of that when it says this, one of my favorite verses, "And we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord who is the Spirit." As we spend time in his presence, we absorb his light and then we reflect it into the world like the moon reflects from the sun. You know, in some sense, we're the light of the world now, but in eternity, we're even going to be more so. And we, as we look forward to our eternal hope, we see in Matthew 13:43, Jesus says, "The righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father." And we know even there, the light still originates with God, but there's going to be less dilution as it comes through us, and we're going to be in his presence fully. So just as we kind of wrap up here, after presenting to us what the character of a citizen of God's kingdom is supposed to look like, Jesus here gives us two pictures of how that character plays out in the world. We are salt, we are light. We are to be salty, we are to be shining. We're to be a preservative. We're to generate thirst in others for God. We're to put good works on display to the glory of God so that people see those things, not to make us look good, but to say, well, that God must be amazing. God must be amazing. We're looking to have our saltiness generate a thirst that leads them ultimately to the Savior.
If you missed any part of Pastor Dave Cook's teaching today on Road to Calvary, or if you'd like to listen to others like it, we encourage you to visit cbcriverhead.org. Once you're there, just click on the Sermons tab. If there's anything from today's teaching that you have a question on, or if you have any prayer requests you'd like us to pray for, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. Call us at 631-727-4112. That number again is 631-727-4112. While we're honored to spend time with you through the airwaves on Road to Calvary, we're aware that having a church community is vital to your growth as a believer. If you're not involved in a local church yet, We encourage you to find one. In fact, if you're in or near the Riverhead area, we'd love to have you join us here at Calvary Baptist Church of Riverhead, New York. We gather each Sunday at 10:50 a.m. for a time of worship and Bible study. You can find all the information you need at cbcriverhead.org. To stay in touch with us throughout the week, find us on Facebook and YouTube. Links to both of those media sites are available on our website. Again, that was cbcriverhead.org. Before you go, we'd ask that you prayerfully consider donating to this ministry. We couldn't do it without listeners like you, and we greatly appreciate any and all amounts. Just click on the Giving tab on our website. Thanks for giving, and thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Road to Calvary.